Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the podcast series Breaking Borders, where hosts James Service and Kevin Rutter gather amazing stories and advice on expanding your company abroad from some of Norway's most exciting businesses. This podcast series is part of Oslo Innovation Week and all founded by Goodwill, perhaps the best essential business service provider out there, helping thousands of overseas companies enter, grow and scale in the UK. Today's episode welcomes Karen Klakeng, the Director of People and Culture at Attensi, a game-changing Norwegian professional training and coaching firm. So, join us as we discuss talent and culture during a scale-up journey. Let's go.
Hello there, everybody. It's the final day of Oslo Innovation Week, and welcome to episode 4 of the Breaking Borders podcast, brought to you by Goodwill. Over the past 4 days, as I'm sure you're aware, we've been joined by Oslo Business Region, Verdane and Norwegian Scale-Up No Fence. Today, we are joined by Attensi, Norwegian Scale-Up, who has seen amazing growth both in the UK and Norway over recent years. This podcast is hosted by myself, James.
And by me, Kevin. Today, we're going to be talking about the importance of people, company culture, how to scale a team. So what better person to be joined by than Karen Klakeng, Director of People and Culture at Attensi. Welcome, Karen. If you'd like to start by telling us a little bit about Attensi, your role there, and previous work that you've done too. So a little bit about your own personal journey so far.
Sure. Nice to be invited on. Great to be here. Attensi, we are a company that makes gamified simulation training. So we effectively train employees in large companies and organizations in a way that makes training engaging and that actually delivers real change in behavior. So people actually become better at what they are spending their days on. I guess as a company now, we've reached a phase of significant growth. We are now just over 150 employees, have our HQ in Oslo. And then we have also an office in the UK in London with about 40 people now. And then we're just in the process of setting up our first office in the US as well. So exciting times.
How long have you been around for? So what stage are you in your journey?
Yeah, so Attensi, it's quite... So we've been around actually for about 10 years now. The first earlier years were very sort of steady and solid growth. And then it's been mainly since 2017 that we've sort of had the exponential growth.
What gave rise to that sudden exponential growth? Was there a change in strategic direction and more funding to make that curve turn upwards so quickly?
Yeah, so it was both a decision that it was the right time to really sort of start scaling up and then to actually take on investment. So we got our first round of external investors at that time. And then we've gone through 2 rounds of more investment since then.
So the people you referred to, that is, you know, pretty significant growth. I haven't realized you've got to 40 in the UK. So that's gone up rapidly. In terms of the roles of the people that are in the UK versus Norway, are they essentially doing the same thing or is there a different focus in each of those places?
In the Norwegian office, I'd say we have basically every function from, we have the technology teams are sitting there as well as the product teams, graphics, etc., and also a delivery and a commercial organization. In the UK, at least for now, and I think that's how it's going to be for the foreseeable future as well, it's more of a commercial and delivery office.
And in terms of sourcing that talent in the UK, how have you approached that?
It's been challenging, but also very interesting. And I have, of course, it's my area, so perhaps I'm a bit biased, but I do think we've managed to build a really fantastic team. It's been a real effort. We've been very proactive about recruiting there. So that's been working with recruiters. I think we've managed to find good partners on that front. That's not done overnight. So really being conscious about which recruiters we work with and then really making sure that they are equipped with knowledge to kind of go out and evangelize on our behalf. We've also done a lot of work to sell ourselves using our own network and really putting in the time and effort to explain to candidates who we are as a company in terms of our culture, who the people are that work there, and really kind of bringing that to the forefront as well. And I think the last point there is really, I think often what kind of tips the balance, especially for candidates who are really strong and who have a lot of options on the table often. We see that the kind of culture piece is not the only thing that they're after, but it's perhaps what makes them choose Attensi over another great company.
So from what you said, clearly you recognize that culture in a small company is really, really important. Certainly we see that with a lot of our clients and internally as a business ourselves. Using the right recruiters, I think finding the right recruiter and when they feel like an extension of you is really important because they get your culture as well. But how important on balance is it when hiring between, from your perspective, as a hirer rather than the hiree, getting a person with the right technical skills and competencies versus somebody who's going to fit culturally, notwithstanding their technical skills and competencies?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? But I don't think you can take either or. You kind of need a bit of both. Yeah, it is a balance. I think, especially as a small company, I think you have to be quite open in terms of how you find the right competencies in a person. It's easy to kind of enter a recruitment with the sort of the menu, right, of the five-legged unicorn that, you know, you want it, how you want the person to look like and sound like and all the things. If you can be a bit open around that and perhaps find someone who has the potential or at least some of the elements in terms of, you know, actual skills and competencies that you want, and then also are a really good fit with the culture and, you know, link in with the ambitions and the values of the company, then I think that often opens the pool a little bit in terms of candidates. And I would say we've been really rigorous around using culture as a genuine screening criteria, meaning that we, of course, we discuss it very thoroughly with people in the interviews, but also actually, you know, rejecting or not giving offers to people who have amazing experiences, skills, competencies, etc., just because we don't see that they would align well enough with our values and our culture. And that is very much down to we have seen in a few cases where people who are great, perhaps on a skill level, come into the company. And if they're not a good alignment with the culture, they affect the team, the whole team, very strongly, very easily. You can never completely mitigate that. But to the extent that we can, we really feel that the culture is so precious. And that is something that we really need to consciously look after by bringing the right people in.
In terms of that culture, do you feel like it's relatively easy to build maybe from the start, but for a company that's maybe been around for a longer period than the tendency, maybe it's difficult to try and build that culture into it now when there's an existing one?
I definitely think that it's hard to backtrack on culture. It is something that if you can get onto it quite consciously as early as possible, it's a good thing. That's not to say it's impossible. With culture, one of the things that might throw people off sometimes, I think a lot of times we'd think of culture as something that should be extremely, you know, organic and just, it should just emerge and be fantastic and useful, but lovely. And I think actually, like, you're conscious with strategy, you also have to be conscious, you know, directional when it comes to culture. Especially if you're a large company, it needs to be explicit what's right and what's wrong. What is the type of behavior that is valued here? And then you need to kind of align, ideally, all your elements of your organization with that. So, you know, it should be like an operating system. It should guide everyone and it should guide everything in the company and really sort of underpin the mission, what you're trying to create as a company identity. It's not impossible, but it's also not something that you can just expect to work itself out, because especially a large company is made up with a lot of people with a very wide variety of backgrounds. And what you want to achieve with culture is to get them all to kind of talk in the same way, adopt the same internal principles when they're at work. And that takes work.
I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, as companies get bigger, it does get much harder because, you know, defining your culture is one thing, but people following something they don't truly believe in will never really work out in the longer term, which is where it comes back to your recruitment piece. And you've got to live it to make it real, not just write it down. You have to write it down to know what it is you're trying to live, if that makes sense too.
Yeah. And this is actually one of the things that we are working a lot with at the moment, because we're very conscious that our culture is very strong, but we're growing really fast. We're moving into new markets. We've got suddenly, a range of first-time managers who we are depending on to really be sort of custodians of that culture in new markets and where we are now, because our founders are no longer able to spend a lot of time with each individual person in the company. One of the key levers that we discuss a lot and think about when it comes to making culture lived and felt by everyone is the leadership. If you can get the managers and the leaders, people who are responsible for other people, to really adopt and internalize the cultures and the values. I think that is an extremely impactful and useful tool in terms of getting the whole organization to follow along. So at least that's a good starting point, I think.
If they see the leaders doing that, they are more likely to, you know, adhere to the same rules or guidelines themselves.
And I guess as you start to go into new markets, you're going to have more people involved in the recruitment process and therefore people picking candidates that they think fit the culture, but maybe they're making the wrong assessments, I guess. So I guess that's going to become increasingly important, as you mentioned, as you go into new markets. You've mentioned the US, obviously, is one market that you're going into at present. What's your strategy widening that around recruitment and going into a new market? So when you came into the UK, obviously, I know some personnel moved from Norway to the UK. I know you did that as well, Karen. So maybe talk around that would be great.
Yeah, it's definitely, and this is also what we hear from a lot of other companies who've kind of done the same journey, to hire a completely unknown brand in a market where everyone is fighting for the same talent. That is hard. I think the way we're approaching it is we are using our network to find people, of course, but also to find good, I guess, reliable recruiters that we can work with. At the same time, we are also going to be quite rigorous around, and this is based on our experience of how we did it in the UK, is involving a lot of our existing people in the recruitment process. So taking it seriously and really investing the time and effort that it takes to making sure that we are really checking off that culture piece for the new locations. And then, of course, we are also, I mean, people like myself and my team who are involved in sort of driving the recruitment process, I think we are also an important gatekeeper when it comes to making sure that candidates are getting the right experience, that we are bringing the right people in the right phase of the process, and also selling the company in the right way to candidates.
How do you factor into that as you move into a new territory that, you know, so you've got company culture and all the stuff you've talked about, which I fully get and fully agree with. Notwithstanding that, you've got just different national cultures. How do you factor that in when you move to a new territory? That's a different dimension again.
I don't know what the right answer to this is from a research perspective. Or for us, we have seen, at least for what works for us, has been to kind of approach it with we move people from our existing company into the new location. Very important to have the early teams there being people who know our product, our mission, our culture, not just a little, but who knows it and represents it really well. You have to also be open to the local culture. We've seen this particularly in the UK. I think, at least to me, I thought from my previous experience that UK and Norway is quite similar, and it is in a lot of ways. But at the same time, there are some really also strong and perhaps more subtle, but still also strong differences that we've had to sort of cater for and adjust to. And it's hard to know what all of those are upfront, but then it's more about being, you know, open to having those conversations and adjusting as you go, and, you know, just being humble to the fact that Norwegians are not always right about everything, I guess.
A couple of times you've mentioned attracting candidates during the early stages when you're going into a new market and how to convince them to join Attensi. Obviously got other offers on the table. Culture obviously is one thing. Are there other things that you talk around? I guess obviously leverage some of what you've done back in Norway is important. Are there any other examples or things that you do?
One of the key things for us also is, I mean, we deliver a product that we are on a mission to make people's work life better by making them better at their jobs. And I think particularly for younger generations, millennials, et cetera, but also I think anyone really, that idea of a sort of a sense of a higher purpose and being part of something that really contributes something good to society is definitely something that is important. So we talk a lot around that and I guess our overall mission. Other things that we talk about is a lot around opportunities, growth opportunities, development opportunities, which I think particularly as a scale up or as a small company is one of the main selling points for people who are, you know, perhaps a bit fed up of being in a larger structure somewhere. They're feeling a bit restricted, perhaps. That opportunity to come in, be part of something early on and really get opportunities in other areas of the business, grow their own teams. That appeals, I think, hugely to a lot of people. So I would not undersell on that.
That actually leads on. One of my questions was going to be around the retention as well as existing people. What is it that you do to make sure that you keep them for as long as possible? progression obviously is one of those, but are there other things that you're doing?
That sort of development piece and giving people opportunities is definitely one element of that. I think people, if they're given opportunities to grow, that is very motivating for people. I think also when it comes to growing and scaling teams, it's also important to recognize that I think we talk a lot about retention as a sort of key KPI for the healthiness of a team. But I think it's important also to recognize that teams, they also go through, and organizations go through an evolution where, you know, the type of person or the type of skill that worked really well in one phase may not be the same appropriate match 2 years later. So some natural attrition is healthy for the company. And I think to just make sure your people are sticking around for the sake of it is not necessarily an indication of a healthy organization either. Understand me right. Our attrition is really low. I do think it's important to, you know, be conscious around the people that you have in your organization. I would also say that one of the things that we talk a lot about in terms of keeping our people is also to keep our team strong. Like, people like working with other great people. So if we can bring in other amazing people that are a good match with our culture and that really bring something new and exciting to the table, that is also something that really gives a boost for the people who are already there and sort of keeps them energized as well.
How do you keep them engaged working remotely? Obviously, not just driven by COVID. I know you had a bit of a remote environment before anyway, but across borders, what initiatives are you doing? How are you driving that?
Yeah, that's been a really exciting and I would say also learning experience for us, because we had a really strong culture of, I guess, in-person socializing before COVID. We have a very young team, a team that loves spending time together. And so we put a lot of effort into this throughout COVID. I mean, there is the social aspect where we essentially move all our socializing virtually. So we had anything from sort of daily photo competitions. We had a Friday beers. We have these quarterly attendee days where we get the whole company together for a day to, you know, update on various things, collaborate, etc. We've kept them virtually. You know, we've sent people stuff. We've done virtual cooking, cocktail classes, you name it. That's worked well. But at the same time, I think people are getting a bit tired of socializing through their screens. So you have to kind of be mindful of that as well. On the more sort of operational basis, we have stand-up meetings across all teams, at least. I mean, I think they were daily in the beginning. And then as we got more used to working virtually, the frequency sort of went down a little, but we also have weekly team meetings where we bring the whole team together just to update for 15 minutes on, you know, whatever's going on. We use Slack for our internal communication, and that's been super important, making sure people are keeping connected and informed. And I would say also, so we've hired 80 plus people since March last year, who we've then interviewed and onboarded, and they may never have met anyone. Some people have worked now in the company for over a year and haven't met any of us in person. To keep those people engaged and bring them into the team in a good way has also been a real interesting challenge. So there's been a lot of focus on setting up introductory meetings with a lot of people across the company really early on, making sure they're really, you know, just being looped into all kinds of conversations to give them a sense of what life is like at a tensee, even though you can't, you know, chat at the coffee machine or wave to someone when they're passing by.
I think it's crazy that the past year has just driven so many companies to onboard so many people in just such an unusual environment. But I mean, I've heard lots of positive stories in terms of how it's actually worked. But I guess ultimately, people are just kind of craving to get back into person as opposed to doing it all remote primarily. We've seen ourselves where the virtual socials that we've done slowly over time, the number of attendees have slowly gone down and down. And I think it's just people just itching to get back to person.
There'll be a permanent change in balance, I think, which is going to be to everybody's benefit, hopefully. You know, we see it ourselves. We need to be engaging all that stuff that you don't get remotely, you know, the coffee machine chats, but equally the ability to concentrate and focus when you're away from that at the same time. So I think everyone's seeing that shift in the blend of how people work going forward.
Yeah. And I think also what's really interesting on that is actually these conversations have been brought to the executive table now. Like, we're having to discuss do we need to meet in person to do what we're about to do with this company? And okay, if we do, how often, what does it look like and where? And that's a conversation that I think before COVID, it was kind of lurking around, but to have it really brought to the table and we are having to make decisions around those things is quite interesting. And we're also seeing a lot of people, candidates, for example, are consciously, they enter into an interview conversation and they say, I want to work remotely. Can you offer me that, for example, whilst others are more about being in the office? It's going to be interesting to see how this sort of plays out over the next couple of years.
Do you see any variations in terms of those requests from Norway versus the UK? So people requesting, for example, to work remote, or maybe the UK's candidates more demanding in terms of what they ask for from a benefit side? Or
I think the kind of requests or ideal seems to be relatively similar across, right? So people just want flexibility. They want choice. They don't want to feel like they're being forced into things, I think is the main kind of overarching theme. But what I do see as a difference is where people are living in sort of metropolitan areas and they're having long commutes, it's inconvenient for them to come to, or it's just resource demanding for them to come to the office on a daily basis, then there could be a stronger preference for working more remotely. Yeah. And also, I think it depends a little bit on roles. So some roles where there is a lot of need for quiet time, you know, solitude, creativity, then perhaps there is a stronger preference for being, you know, choosing your space and choosing your time. Whereas some commercial roles, for example, where you need interactive, you like having a bit of noise around you, people perhaps are more extroverts, they may, you know, gravitate heavier towards, you know, having a greater amount of office attendance.
And I guess if you get your interview process right and you do all the right cultural assessments, then hopefully you end up with the right candidate that you can trust to work in that flexible way.
Yeah, that is definitely the ideal. And I think also as a company, it is a responsibility to set some guidelines, especially when we are, for example, onboarding a lot of people, as I mentioned. And with the people who've been there for a long time, they know our culture, they know what's kind of right and wrong. Then it's perhaps less important to have the FaceTime. They also have the relationships. But we also have to think about how we bring the new people in. And that also requires the existing people to take part of the office environment. So there is just a lot of variables that go into this discussion. And it is a tricky one to get right, I think. But I think it's just, you got to just start somewhere and try it out and then see, adjust as you go along, I guess.
You've got a huge matrix of interactions going on there. You used the word guidelines a second ago, which I like personally, because guidelines is softer than rules. And I think it's just about having that framework and trying to get people to follow that with sensible flexibility around it. So it sounds like it's quite easy for you, Karen. Hire great people, create a great culture, and give them engaging jobs to do. I mean, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's definitely best job in the world. But I wouldn't say it's easy. But that's why it's exciting, right? People are the most complex problem you get. Can't solve it.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's exciting.
Perfect. Thank you, Karen, for your time. I've got two final questions for you, which hopefully you've got answers for. We'll wait and see. Obviously, this event is part of Oslo Innovation Week 2021. Obviously, as an Oslo-based startup or scale-up, how does it feel to be part of Oslo Innovation Week?
I think it's really, really exciting. I think the tech scene and innovation scene in Norway and Oslo has really picked up over the last couple of years. So I think it's super cool to see what others are doing and just kind of, get some inspiration from other companies in similar situations. And I also really, the sort of focus on the sustainability and really using tech to create, make an impact of positive to the world is really, really nice and resonates well with what we're doing in Attensi as well.
Yeah, perfect. And we had Siv Anderson from Oslo Business Region on earlier in the week, and she was talking about the growth on the startup scene within Oslo and where it's gone in the past 10 years. And we've obviously had NoFence on as well yesterday, talking about the importance of sustainability. So it's exciting times, I would say, for the Oslo startup scene. So we've been part of Oslo Innovation Week for the past couple of years, and it's great to see just the number of events that they're putting on and the diversity changing year on year. Final question for you, Karen, is we end on this question for everybody. So who or what is it that inspires you?
Yeah, So I would say I'm really inspired by the people I work with. I think it's really amazing to see the stuff that they produce and come up with on a day-to-day basis and just what they create as teams. So I think if I'm feeling a bit gloomy one day, I can just tap into that. And that really brings me into the right zone. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Okay, perfect. Really appreciate your time, Karen.
Yeah, some great insights there. Agreed with everything you said. It's fascinating, as you say, people are so different. The complexity never ends in a way. So really good to hear what your stories on that. And thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast series, Breaking Borders. That's all for this time. Remember that Goodwill have helped thousands of overseas companies expand and run smooth, efficient and compliant UK operations. This series was exclusively part of Oslo Innovation Week 2021, an annual event highlighting bold solutions that solve real global challenges through entrepreneurship, technology, and innovation. Follow the Breaking Borders podcast for upcoming episodes.